asking for the mediation of a stranger, and accepting without question even those parts of Luke's judgment that had gone against him. Of the rest of the crowd, watching with hope and expectation and relief that a Jedi was there to keep things from getting out of hand. I haven't experienced any such hatred. Sabaoth gazed at him from under bushy eyebrows.
You will,
he said darkly.
As will your sister and her children.
Luke's chest tightened. I can protect them.
Can you teach them as well?
Sabaoth countered.
Have you the wisdom and skill to bring them to full knowledge of the ways of the Force?
I think so, yes. Sabaoth snorted.
If you think but do not know, then you gamble with their lives,
he bit out.
You risk their futures over a selfish whim.
It's not a whim, Luke insisted. Together, Leia and I can do it.
If you try, you will risk losing them to the dark side,
Sabaoth said flatly. He sighed, his eyes drifting away from Luke as he looked around the room.
We can't take that chance, Luke,
he said quietly.
There are so few of us as it is. The endless war for power still rages. The galaxy is in turmoil. We who remain must stand together against those who would destroy everything.
He turned his eyes suddenly back on Luke.
No, we can't risk being divided and destroyed again. You must bring your sister and her children to me.
I can't do that, Luke said. Sabaoth's expression changed. Not now, at least, Luke amended hastily. It wouldn't be safe for Leia to travel right now. The Imperials have been hunting for her for months, and Jomark isn't all that far from the edge of their territory.
Do you doubt that I can protect her?
No, I don't doubt you, Luke said, choosing his words carefully. It's just that... He paused. Sabaoth had gone abruptly stiff, his eyes gazing outward at nothing. Master Sabaoth? He asked. Are you all right? There was no reply. Luke stepped to his side, reaching out with the Force and wondering uneasily if the other was ill. But as always, the Jedi Master's mind was closed to him. Come, Master Sabaoth, he said, taking the other's arm. I'll help you to your chambers. Sabaoth blinked twice, and with what seemed to be an effort, brought his gaze back to Luke's face. He took a shuddering breath, and suddenly he was back to normal again.
You're tired, Luke,
he said.
Leave me, and return to your chambers for sleep.
Luke was tired, he had to admit. Are you all right?
I'm fine,
Sabaoth assured him, a strangely grim tone to his voice. Because if you need my help...
I said leave me,
Sabaoth snapped.
I am a Jedi Master. I need help from no one.
Luke found himself 2 paces back from Sabaoth, without any recollection of having taken steps. I'm sorry, Master Sabaoth, he said. I didn't mean any disrespect. The other's face softened a bit.
I know you didn't,
he said. He took another deep breath, exhaled it quietly.
Bring your sister to me, Jedi Skywalker. I will protect her from the Empire, and will teach her such power as you can't imagine.
Far in the back of Luke's mind, a small warning bell went off. Something about those words, or perhaps the way Sabaoth had said them.
Now return to your chambers,
Sabaoth ordered. Once again, his eyes seemed to be drifting away toward nothing.
Sleep, and we will talk further in the morning.
He stood before her, his face half hidden by the cowl of his robe. his yellow eyes piercingly bright as they gazed across the infinite distance between them. His lips moved, but his words were drowned out by the throaty hooting of alarms all around them, filling Mara with an urgency that was rapidly edging into panic. Between her and the Emperor, two figures appeared. The dark, imposing image of Darth Vader, and the smaller black-clad figure of Luke Skywalker. They stood before the Emperor, facing each other, and ignited their lightsabers. The blades crossed, brilliant red-white against brilliant green-white, and they prepared for battle. And then, without warning, the blades disengaged, and with twin roars of hatred audible even over the alarms, both turned and strode toward the Emperor. Mara heard herself cry out as she struggled to rush to her master's aid, but the distance was too great, her body too sluggish. She screamed a challenge, trying to at least distract them, but neither Vader nor Skywalker seemed to hear her. They moved outward to flank the Emperor, and as they lifted their lightsabers high, she saw that the Emperor was gazing at her. She looked back at him, wanting desperately to turn away from the coming disaster, but unable to move. A thousand thoughts and emotions flooded in through that gaze, a glittering kaleidoscope of pain and fear and rage that spun far too fast for her to really absorb. The Emperor raised his hands, sending cascades of jagged blue-white lightning at his enemies. Both men staggered under the counterattack, and Mara watched with the sudden agonized hope that this time it might end differently. But no. Vader and Skywalker straightened, and with another roar of rage, they lifted their lightsabers high.
"You will kill Luke Skywalker!"
And with a jerk that threw her against her restraints, Mara snapped out of the dream. For a minute, she just sat there, gasping for breath, and struggling against the fading vision of lightsabers poised to strike. The small cockpit of the skip ray pressed tightly around her, triggering a momentary surge of claustrophobia. The back and neck of her flight suit were wet with perspiration, clammy against her skin. From what seemed to be a great distance, a proximity alert was pinging. The dream again. The same dream that had followed her around the galaxy for 5 years now. The same situation. The same horrifying ending. The same final desperate plea. But this time, things were going to be different. This time, she had the power to kill Luke Skywalker. She looked out at the mottling of hyperspace spinning around the skipray's canopy. Some last bit of her mind coming fully awake. No, that was wrong. She wasn't going to kill Skywalker at all. She was going to ask him for help. The sour taste of bile rose into her throat. With an effort, she forced it down.
"No argument,"
she told herself sternly. If she wanted to rescue Card, she was going to have to go through with it. Skywalker owed Card this much. Later, after he'd repaid the debt, there would be time enough to kill him. The proximity alert changed tone, indicating 30 seconds to go. Cupping the hyperdrive levers in her hand, Mara watched the indicator go to zero and gently pushed the levers back. Modeling became star lines, became the black of space. Space and the dark sphere of a planet directly ahead. She had arrived at Jomark. Mentally crossing her fingers, she tapped the comm, keying the code she'd programmed in during the trip. Luck was with her. Here, at least. Thrawn's people were still using standard Imperial guidance transponders. The skipray's displays flashed the location. An island forming the center of a ring-shaped lake just past the sunset line. She triggered the transponder once more to be sure, then keyed in the sublight drive and started down, trying to ignore that last image of the Emperor's face. The wailing of the ship's alarm jerked her awake.
"What?"
She barked aloud to the empty cockpit, sleep's sticky eyes flicking across the displays for the source of the trouble. It wasn't hard to find. The skipray had rolled half over onto its side, its control surfaces screaming with stress as the computer fought to keep her from spinning out of the sky. Inexplicably, she was already deep inside the lower atmosphere, well past the point where she should have switched over to repulsor lifts. Clenching her teeth, she made the switch over and then gave the scan map a quick look. She'd only been out of it for a minute or two, but at the speed the skip ray was doing, even a few seconds of inattention could be fatal. She dug her knuckles hard into her eyes, fighting against the fatigue pulling at her and feeling sweat breaking out again on her forehead. Flying while half asleep, her old instructor had often warned her, was the quickest, if messiest, way to end your life. And if she had gone down, there would have been no one to blame but herself. Or would there? She leveled the ship off, confirmed that there were no mountains in her path, and keyed in the autopilot. The Islamir and portable nutrient framework that Aves had given her were back near the aft hatchway, secured to the engine access panel. Unstrapping from her seat, Mara made her way back toward it. It was as if someone had snapped on a light switch. One second she felt as if she had just finished a four-day battle. Half a step later, a meter or so from the Islamir, the fatigue abruptly vanished. She smiled grimly to herself. So her suspicion had been correct. Thrawn's mad Jedi master didn't want any company. "Nice try," she called into the air. Unfastening the Islamir frame from the access panel, she lugged it back to the cockpit and wedged it beside her seat. The rim of mountains surrounding the lake was visible now on the electropulse scanner, and the infrared had picked up an inhabited structure on the far side. Probably where Skywalker and this mad Jedi Master were, she decided. A guess that was confirmed a moment later as the sensors picked up a small mass of spaceship-grade metal just outside the building. There were no weapons emplacements or defense shields anywhere that she could detect, either on the rim or on the island beneath her. Maybe Sabaoth didn't think he needed anything so primitive as turbo lasers to protect him. Maybe he was right. Hunching herself over the control board, hair trigger alert for any danger, Mara headed in. She was nearly to the midpoint of the crater when the attack came. A sudden impact on the skipray's underside that kicked the entire craft a few centimeters upward. The second impact came on the heels of the first. This one centered on the ventral fin and yawing the ship hard to starboard. The ship jolted a third time before Mara finally identified the weapon. Not missiles or laser blasts, but small, fast-moving rocks. Undetectable by most of the skipray's sophisticated sensors. The fourth impact knocked out the repulsor lifts, sending the skipray falling out of the sky.
Chapter 21.
Mara swore under her breath, throwing the skipray's control surfaces into glide mode and keying for a contour scan of the cliff face beneath the rim building. A landing up on the rim was out of the question now. Putting down on the limited area up there without her repulsor lifts might be possible, but not with a Jedi Master fighting her the whole way. Alternately, she could go for the dark island beneath her, which would give her more room to operate, but leave her with the problem of getting back up to the rim. Ditto if she tried to find a big enough landing area somewhere else down the mountains. Or she could admit defeat, fire up the main drive and pull for space, and go after Card alone. Gritting her teeth, she studied the contour scan. The rock storm had stopped after the fourth hit, the Jedi Master no doubt waiting to see if she'd crash without further encouragement on his part. With a little luck, maybe she could convince him that she was done for without actually wrecking the ship in the process. If she could just find the proper formation in that cliff face... There it was, perhaps a third of the way down. A roughly hemispherical concavity where erosion had eaten away a layer of softer rock from the harder material surrounding it. The ledge that had been left beneath the indentation was relatively flat, and the whole thing was large enough to hold the skipray comfortably. Now all she had to do was get the ship there. Mentally crossing her fingers, she flipped the ship nose up and eased in the main sublight drive. The glare of the drive trail lit up the near side of the rim mountains, throwing them into a dancing mosaic of light and shadow. The skipray jerked up and forward, stabilized a little as Mara brought the nose a bit farther back off vertical. It threatened to overbalance, eased back as she tapped the control surfaces, twitched almost too far in the other direction, then steadied. Balancing on the drive like this was an inherently unstable operation, and Mara could feel the sweat breaking out on her forehead as she fought to keep the suddenly unwieldy craft under control. If Sabaoth suspected what she was trying, it wouldn't take much effort on his part to finish her off. Setting her teeth together, splitting her attention between the approach scope, the airspeed indicator, and the throttle, she brought the ship in. She nearly didn't make it. The skipray was still 10 meters short of the ledge when its drive trail hit the cliff face below it with enough heat to ignite the rock. And an instant later, the ship was sheathed in brilliantly colored fire. Mara held her course, trying to ignore the warbling of the hull warning sirens as she strained to see through the flames between her and her target. There was no time to waste with second thoughts. If she hesitated even a few seconds, the drive could easily burn away too much of the ledge for her to safely put down. 5 meters away now, and the temperature inside the cabin was beginning to rise. Then three, then one. There was a horrible screech of metal on rock as the skipray's ventral fin scraped against the edge of the ledge. Mara cut the drive and braced herself, and with a stomach-churning drop, the ship dropped a meter to land tail first on the ledge. For a second, it almost seemed it would remain balanced there. Then, with ponderous grace, it toppled slowly forward and slammed down hard onto its landing skids. Wiping the sweat out of her eyes, Mara keyed for a status readout. The air-stilting maneuver had been taught to her as an absolute last-ditch alternative to crashing. Now she knew why. But she'd been lucky. The landing skids and ventral fin were a mess, but the engines, hyperdrive, life support, and hull integrity were still all right. Shutting the systems back to standby, she hoisted the Islamir frame up onto her shoulders and headed aft. The main portside hatchway was unusable, opening as it did out over empty space. There was, however, a secondary hatch set behind the dorsal laser cannon turret. Getting up the access ladder and through it with the Islamir on her back was something of a trick, but after a couple of false starts, she made it. The metal of the upper hull was uncomfortably hot to her touch as she climbed out onto it, but the cold winds coming off the lake below were a welcome relief after the superheated air inside. She propped the hatchway open to help cool the ship and looked upward. And to her chagrin, discovered that she'd miscalculated. Instead of being 10 to 15 meters beneath the top of the crater, as she'd estimated, she was in fact nearly 50 meters down. The vast scale of the crater, combined with the mad rush of the landing itself, had skewed her perception.
"Nothing like a little exercise after a long trip," she muttered to herself, pulling the glow rod from her belt pack and playing it across her line of ascent. The climb wasn't going to be fun, especially with the top-heavy weight of the Islamir frame. But it looked possible. Attaching the glow rod to the shoulder of her jumpsuit, she picked out her first set of handholds and started up. She'd made maybe 2 meters when, without warning, the rock in front of her suddenly blazed with light. The shock of it sent her sliding back down the cliff face to a bumpy landing atop the skipray. But she landed in a crouch with her blaster ready in her hand. Squinting against the twin lights glaring down on her, she snapped off a quick shot and took out the leftmost of them. The other promptly shut off. And then, even as she tried to blink away the purple blobs obscuring her vision, she heard a faint but unmistakable sound. The warbling of an R2 droid. "Hey," she called softly.
"You, droid. Are you Skywalker's astromech unit? If you are, you know who I am. We met on Merkur, remember?"
The droid remembered all right, but from the indignant tone of the reply, it wasn't a memory the R2 was especially fond of.
"Yes, well, skip all that," she told it tartly. "Your master's in trouble. I came to warn him."
Another electronic warble, this one fairly dripping with sarcasm.
"It's true,"
Mara insisted. Her dazzled vision was starting to recover now, and she could make out the dark shape of the X-Wing hovering on its repulsor lips about 5 meters away. Its two starboard laser cannons pointed directly at her face.
"I need to talk to him right away,"
Mara went on.
before that Jedi Master up there figures out I'm still alive and tries to rectify the situation. She'd expected more sarcasm, or even out-and-out approval for such a goal. But the droid didn't say anything. Perhaps it had witnessed the brief battle between the Skipray and Sabaoth's flying boulders.
"Yes, that was him trying to kill me," she confirmed. "Nice and quiet, so that your master wouldn't notice anything and ask awkward questions."
The droid beeped what sounded like a question of its own.
"I came here because I need Skywalker's help," Mara said,
taking a guess as to the content.
"Card's been captured by the Imperials, and I can't get him out by myself." Card, in case you've forgotten, was the one who helped your friend set up the ambush against those stormtroopers and got both of you off Merkur. You owe him.
The droid snorted.
"All right, then," Mara snapped. "Don't do it for Card, and don't do it for me. Take me up there, because otherwise your precious master won't know until it's too late that his new teacher Sabaoth is working for the Empire."
The droid thought it over. Then slowly, the X-Wing rotated to point its lasers away from her and sidled over to the damaged Skipray. Mara holstered her blaster and got ready, wondering how she was going to squeeze into the cockpit with the Islamir framework strapped to her shoulders. She needn't have worried. Instead of maneuvering to give her access to the cockpit, the droid instead presented her with one of the landing skids.
"You must be joking," Mara protested,
eyeing the skid hovering at waist height in front of her and thinking about the long drop to the lake below. But it was clear that the droid was serious, and after a moment, she reluctantly climbed aboard.
"Okay,"
she said when she was as secure as she could arrange.
"Let's go. And watch out for flying rocks."
The X-Wing eased away and began moving upward. Mara braced herself, waiting for Sabaoth to pick up the attack where he'd left off. But they reached the top without incident. And as the droid settled the X-Wing safely to the ground, Mara saw the shadowy figure of a cloaked man standing silently beside the fence surrounding the house.
"You must be Sabaoth,"
Mara said to him, as she slid off the landing skid and got a grip on her blaster.
"You always greet your visitors this way?"
For a moment, the figure didn't speak. Mara took a step toward him, feeling an eerie sense of déjà vu as she tried to peer into the hood at the face not quite visible there. The Emperor had looked much the same way that night when he'd first chosen her from her home.
"I have no visitors except lackeys from Grand Admiral Thrawn,"
the figure said at last.
"All others are by definition intruders."
"What makes you think I'm not with the Empire?" Mara countered. "In case it escaped your notice, I was following the Imperial beacon on that island down there when you knocked me out of the sky."
In the dim starlight, she had the impression that Sabaoth was smiling inside the hood.
"And what precisely does that prove?"
he asked.
"Merely that others can play with the Grand Admiral's little toys."
"And can others get hold of the Grand Admiral's Islamari, too?"
she demanded, gesturing toward the frame on her back.
"Enough of this. The Grand Admiral..."
"The Grand Admiral is your enemy,"
Sabaoth snapped suddenly.
"Don't insult me with childish denials, Mara Jade. I saw it all in your mind as you approached. Did you really believe you could take my Jedi away from me?"
Mara swallowed, shivering from the cold night wind and the colder feeling within her. Thrawn had said that Sabaoth wasn't sane, and she could indeed hear the unstable edge of madness in his voice. But there was far more to the man than just that. There was a hard steel behind the voice, ruthless and calculating, with a sense of both supreme power and supreme confidence underlying it all. It was like hearing the Emperor speak again.
"I need Skywalker's help," she said,
forcing her own voice to remain calm.
"All I need to do is borrow him for a little while."
"And then you return him,"
Sabaoth said sardonically. Mara clenched her teeth.
"I'll have his help, Sabaoth, whether you like it or not."
There was no doubt this time that the Jedi Master had smiled. A thin, ghostly smile.
Oh no, Mara Jade, he murmured. You are mistaken. Do you truly believe that simply because you stand in the middle of an empty space in the Force, that I am powerless against you?
There's also this, Mara said, pulling her blaster from its holster and aiming it at his chest.
Sabaoth didn't move, but suddenly Mara could feel a surge of tension in the air around her.
No one points a weapon at me with impunity,
the Jedi Master said with quiet menace.
You will pay dearly for this one day.
I'll take my chances, Mara said, retreating a step to put her back against the X-Wing's starboard S-foils.
Above and to her left, she could hear the R2 droid chirping thoughtfully to itself.
You want to stand aside and let me pass? Or do we do this the hard way?
Sabaoth seemed to study her.
I could destroy you, you know, he said.
The menace had vanished from his voice now, leaving something almost conversational in its place.
Right there where you stand, before you even knew the attack was coming. But I won't. Not now. I've felt your presence over the years, Mara Jade. The rising and falling of your power after the Emperor's death took most of your strength away. And now I've seen you in my meditations. Someday you will come to me of your own free will.
I'll take my chances on that one, too, Mara said.
You don't believe me,
Sabaoth said with another of his ghostly smiles.
But you shall. The future is fixed, my young would-be Jedi, as is your destiny. Someday you will kneel before me. I have foreseen it.
I wouldn't trust Jedi foreseeing all that much if I were you, Mara retorted, risking a glance past him at the darkened building and wondering what Sabaoth would do if she tried shouting Skywalker's name. The Emperor did a lot of that too. It didn't help him much in the end.
Perhaps I am wiser than the Emperor was,
Sabaoth said, his head turned slightly.
I told you to go to your chambers,
he said in a louder voice.
Yes, you did,
a familiar voice acknowledged. And from the shadows at the front of the house, a new figure moved across the courtyard. Skywalker.
Then why are you here?
Sabaoth asked.
I felt a disturbance in the Force,
the younger man said, as he passed through the gate and came more fully into the dim starlight. Above his black tunic, his face was expressionless, his eyes fixed on Mara. As if a battle were taking place nearby. Hello, Mara.
Skywalker,
she managed between dry lips. With all that had happened to her since her arrival in the Jomark system, it was only now just dawning on her the enormity of the task she'd set for herself. She, who'd openly told Skywalker that she would someday kill him, was now going to have to convince him that she was more trustworthy than a Jedi Master.
Look, Skywalker, aren't you aiming that at the wrong person?
He asked mildly.
I thought I was the one you were gunning for.
Mara had almost forgotten the blaster she had pointed at Sabaoth.
I didn't come here to kill you, she said.
Even to her own ears, the words sounded thin and deceitful.
Card's in trouble with the Empire. I need your help to get him out.
I see. Skywalker looked at Sabaoth.
What happened to you, Master Sabaoth?
What does it matter?
The other countered.
Despite her words just now, she did indeed come here to destroy you. Would you rather I had not stopped her?
Skywalker,
Mara began. He stopped her with an upraised hand, his eyes still on Sabaoth.
Did she attack you?
He asked.
Or threaten you in any way?
Mara looked at Sabaoth and felt the breath freeze in her lungs. The earlier confidence had vanished from the Jedi Master's face. In its place was something cold and deadly, directed not at her, but it's Skywalker. And suddenly Mara understood. Skywalker wouldn't need convincing of Sabaoth's treachery after all. Somehow he already knew.
What does it matter what her precise actions were?
Sabaoth demanded, his voice colder even than his face.
What matters is that she is a living example of the danger I have been warning you of since your arrival. The danger all Jedi face from a galaxy that hates and fears us.
No, Master Sabaoth, Skywalker said, his voice almost gentle. Surely you must understand that the means are no less important than the ends. A Jedi uses the Force for knowledge and defense, never for attack. Sabaoth snorted.
A platitude for the simple-minded. Or for those with insufficient wisdom to make their own decisions. I am beyond such things, Jedi Skywalker. As you will be someday, if you choose to remain.
Skywalker shook his head. I'm sorry, he said. I can't. He turned away and walked toward Mara.
Then you turn your back on the galaxy,
Sabaoth said, his voice now earnest and sincere.
Only with our guidance and strength can they ever hope to achieve real maturity. You know that as well as I do.
Skywalker stopped.
But you just said they hate us, he pointed out. How can we teach people who don't want our guidance?
We can heal the galaxy, Luke,
Sabaoth said quietly.
Together, you and I can do it. Without us, there is no hope. None at all.
Maybe he can do it without you,
Mara put in loudly, trying to break up the verbal spell Sabaoth was weaving. She'd seen the same sort of thing work for the Emperor, and Skywalker's eyelids were heavy enough as it was. Too heavy, in fact. Like hers had been on the approach to Jomark. Stepping away from the X-Wing, she walked over to Skywalker. Sabaoth made a small movement, as if he were going to stop her. She hefted her blaster, and he seemed to abandon the idea. Even without looking at him, she could tell when the Force-empty zone around her Isilimir touched Skywalker. He inhaled sharply, shoulders straightening from a slump he probably hadn't even noticed they had, and nodded as if he finally understood a hitherto unexplained piece of the puzzle.
Is this how you would heal the galaxy, Master Sabaoth? He asked. By coercion and deceit?
Abruptly, Sabaoth threw back his head and laughed. It was about the last reaction Mara would have expected from him, and the sheer surprise of it momentarily froze her muscles. And in that split second, the Jedi Master struck. It was only a small rock, as rocks went, but it came in out of nowhere to strike her gun hand with paralyzing force. The blaster went spinning off into the darkness as her hand flared with pain and then went numb. Watch out! She snapped to Skywalker, dropping down into a crouch and scrambling around for her weapon as a second stone whistled past her ear. There was a snap hiss from beside her, and suddenly the terrain was bathed in the green-white glow of Skywalker's lightsaber.
Get behind the ship, he ordered her. I'll hold him off.
The memory of Murker flashed through Mara's mind. But even as she opened her mouth to remind him of how useless he was without the Force, he took a long step forward to put himself outside the Isilimir's influence. The lightsaber flashed sideways, and she heard the double crunch as its brilliant blade intercepted two more incoming rocks. Still laughing, Sabaoth raised his hand and sent a flash of blue lightning toward them. Skywalker caught the bolt on his lightsaber, and for an instant, the green of the blade was surrounded by a blue-white coronal discharge. A second bolt shot past him to vanish at the edge of the empty zone around Mara. A third again wrapped itself around the lightsaber blade. Mara's fumbling hand brushed something metallic. Her blaster. Scooping it up, she swung it toward Sabaoth. And with a brilliant flash of laser fire, the whole scene seemed to blow up in front of her. She had forgotten about the droid sitting up there in the X-Wing. Apparently, Sabaoth had forgotten about it, too. Skywalker? She called, blinking at the purple haze floating in front of her eyes and wrinkling her nose at the tingling smell of ozone.
Where are you?
Over here, by Sabaoth,
Skywalker's voice said.
He's still alive.
We can fix that,
Mara growled, carefully picking her way across the steaming ruts the X-Wing's laser cannon had gouged in the ground. She headed over. Sabaoth was lying on his back, unconscious but breathing evenly, with Skywalker kneeling over him.
Not even singed,
she murmured.
Impressive.
R2 wasn't shooting to kill,
Skywalker said, his fingertips moving gently across the old man's face.
It was probably the sonic shock that got him.
That or getting knocked off his feet by the shockwave,
Mara agreed, lining her blaster up on the still figure.
Get out of the way. I'll finish it.
Skywalker looked up at her.
We're not going to kill him, he said. Not like this.
Would you rather wait until he's conscious again and can fight back?
She retorted.
There's no need to kill him at all,
Skywalker insisted.
We can be off Jomark long before he wakes up.
You don't leave an enemy at your back,
she told him stiffly.
Not if you like living.
He doesn't have to be an enemy, Mara,
Skywalker said, with that irritating earnestness of his.
He's ill. Maybe he can be cured.
Mara felt her lip twist.
You didn't hear the way he was talking before you showed up,
she said.
He's insane, all right, but that's not all he is anymore. He's a lot stronger, and a whole lot more dangerous.
She hesitated.
He sounded just like the Emperor and Vader used to.
A muscle in Skywalker's cheek twitched.
Vader was deep in the dark side, too, he told her. He was able to break that hold and come back. Maybe Sabaoth can do the same.
I wouldn't bet on it,
Mara said. But she holstered her blaster. They didn't have time to debate the issue, and as long as she needed Skywalker's help, he had effective veto on decisions like this.
Just remember, it's your back that'll get the knife if you're wrong.
I know. He looked down at Sabaoth once more, then back up at her.
You said Card was in trouble.
Yes.
Mara nodded, glad to change the subject. Skywalker's mention of the Emperor and Vader had reminded her all too clearly of that recurring dream.
The Grand Admiral's taken him. I need your help to get him out.
She braced herself for the inevitable argument and bargaining, but to her surprise, he simply nodded and stood up.
Okay, he said. Let's go.
With one last mournful electronic wail, R2 signed off, and with the usual flicker of pseudo-motion, the X-Wing was gone.
Well, he's not happy about it,
Luke said, shutting down the skip-ray's transmitter. But I think I've persuaded him to go straight home.
You better be more than just thinking you've persuaded him,
Mara warned from the pilot's chair, her eyes on the nav computer display.
Sneaking into an Imperial supply depot is going to be hard enough without a New Republic X-Wing in tow.
Right,
Luke said, throwing a sideways look at her and wondering if getting into the skip-ray with her had been one of the smarter things he'd done lately. Mara had put the Islamir away in the rear of the ship, and he could feel her hatred of him simmering beneath her consciousness like a half-burned fire. It evoked unpleasant memories of the Emperor, the man who'd been Mara's teacher, and Luke briefly wondered if this could be some sort of overly elaborate trick to lure him to his death. But her hatred seemed to be under control, and there was no deceit in her that he could detect. But then, he hadn't seen Sabaoth's deceit either, until it was almost too late. Luke shifted in his chair, his face warming with embarrassment at how easily he'd been taken in by Sabaoth's act. But it hadn't all been an act, he reminded himself. The Jedi Master's emotional instabilities were genuine. That much he was convinced of. And even if those instabilities didn't extend as far as the insanity that Mara had alluded to, they certainly extended far enough for Sabaoth to qualify as ill. And if what she'd said about Sabaoth working with the Empire was also true, Luke shivered.
I will teach her such power as you can't imagine,
Sabaoth had said about Leia. The words had been different from those Vader had spoken to Luke on Endor, but the dark sense behind them had been identical. Whatever Sabaoth had once been, there was no doubt in Luke's mind that he was now moving along the path of the dark side.
And yet, Luke had been able to help Vader win his way back from that same path.
Was it conceit to think he could do the same for Sabaoth? He shook the thought away. However Sabaoth's destiny might yet be entwined with his, such encounters were too far in the future to begin planning for them. For now, he needed to concentrate on the immediate task at hand, and to leave the future to the guidance of the Force.
"How did the Grand Admiral find Card?"
he asked Mara. Her lips compressed momentarily, and Luke caught a flash of self-reproach.
"They put a homing beacon aboard my ship," she said. "I led them right to his hideout."
Luke nodded, thinking back to the rescue of Leia and that harrowing escape from the first Death Star aboard the Falcon.
"They pulled that same trick on us, too," he said. "That's how they found the Yavin base."
"Considering what it cost them, I don't think you've got any complaints coming," Mara said sarcastically.
"I don't imagine the Emperor was pleased," Luke murmured.
"No, he wasn't,"
Mara said, her voice dark with memories of her own.
"Vader nearly died for that blunder."
Deliberately, she looked over at Luke's hands.
"That was when he lost his right hand, in fact."
Luke flexed the fingers of his artificial right hand, feeling a ghostly echo of the searing pain that had lanced through it as Vader's lightsaber had sliced through skin and muscle and bone. A fragment of an old Tatooine aphorism flickered through his mind, something about the passing of evil from one generation to the next.
"What's the plan?" he asked.
Mara took a deep breath, and Luke could sense the emotional effort as she put the past aside.
"Card's being held aboard the Grand Admiral's flagship, the Chimera," she told him. "According to their flight schedule, they're going to be taking on supplies in the Wistral system 4 days from now. If we push it, we should be able to get there a few hours ahead of them. We'll ditch the skip ray, take charge of one of the supply shuttles, and just go on up with the rest of the flight pattern."
Luke thought it over. It sounded tricky, but not ridiculously so.
"What happens after we're aboard?"
"Standard Imperial procedure is to keep all the shuttle crews locked aboard their ships while the Chimera's crewers handle the unloading," Mara said. "Or at least that was standard procedure 5 years ago. Means we'll need some kind of diversion to get out of the shuttle."
"Sounds risky." Luke shook his head.
"We don't want to draw attention to ourselves."
"You got any better ideas?"
Luke shrugged.
"Not yet," he said.
"But we've got 4 days to think about it.
We'll come up with something."
Chapter 22.
Mara eased the repulsor lifts off, and with a faint metallic clank, the cargo shuttle touched down on the main deck of the Chimera's aft hangar bay.
"Shuttle 37 down," Luke announced into the comm. "Awaiting further orders."
"Shuttle 37 acknowledged,"
the voice of the controller came over the speaker.
"Shut down all systems and prepare for unloading."
"Got it."
Luke reached over to shut off the comm, but Mara stopped him.
"Control, this is my first cargo run," she said, her voice carrying just the right touch of idle curiosity. "About how long until we'll be able to leave?"
"I suggest you make yourselves comfortable,"
Control said dryly.
"We unload all the shuttles before any of you leave. Figure a couple of hours at the least."
"Oh," Mara said, sounding taken aback. "Well, thanks. Maybe I'll take a nap."
She signed off.
"Good," she said, unstrapping and standing up. "That ought to give us enough time to get to the detention center and back."
"Let's just hope they haven't transferred Card off the ship,"
Luke said, following her to the rear of the command deck and the spiral stairway leading down to the storage area below.
"They haven't," Mara said, heading down the stairs. "The only danger is that they might have started the full treatment already."
Luke frowned down at her.
"The full treatment?"
"Their interrogation."
Mara reached the center of the storage room and looked appraisingly around.
"All right. Just about... there should do it."
She pointed to a section of the deck in front of her.
Out of the way of prying eyes, and you shouldn't hit anything vital. Right.
Luke ignited his lightsaber and began carefully cutting a hole in the floor. He was most of the way through when there was a brilliant spark from the hole, and the lights in the storage room abruptly went out.
It's okay, Luke told Mara as she muttered something vicious under her breath. The lightsaber gives off enough light to see by.
I'm more worried that the cable might have arced to the hangar deck, she countered. They couldn't help but notice that.
Luke paused, stretching out with Jedi senses.
Nobody nearby seems to have seen anything, he told Mara.
We'll hope.
She gestured to the half-finished cut.
Get on with it.
He did so. A minute later, with the help of a magnetic winch, they had hauled the severed section of decking and hull into the storage room. A few centimeters beneath it, lit eerily by the green light from Luke's lightsaber, was the hangar bay deck. Mara got the winch's grapple attached to it. Stretching out flat on his stomach, Luke extended the lightsaber down through the hole. There he paused, waiting until he could sense the corridor beneath the hangar deck was clear.
Don't forget to bevel it,
Mara reminded him, as the lightsaber bit smoothly into the hardened metal.
A gaping hole in the ceiling would be a little too obvious for even conscripts to miss.
Luke nodded and finished the cut. Mara was ready, and even as he shut down the lightsaber, she had the winch pulling the thick slab of metal up into the shuttle. She brought it perhaps a meter up, and then shut down the motor.
That's far enough, she said.
Blaster ready in her hand, she sat gingerly on the still warm edge of the hole and dropped lightly down to the deck below. There was a second's pause as she looked around.
All clear, she hissed.
Luke sat down on the edge and looked over at the winch control. Reaching out with the force, he triggered the switch and followed her down. The deck below was farther than it had looked, but his Jedi-enhanced muscles handled the impact without trouble. Recovering his balance, he looked up just as the metal plug settled neatly back down into the hole.
Looks pretty good, Mara murmured. I don't think anyone will notice.
Not unless they look straight up, Luke agreed. Which way to the detention center?
There, Mara said, gesturing with her blaster to their left. We're not going to get there dressed like this, though. Come on.
She led the way to the end of the passage, then down a crossway to another wider corridor. Luke kept his senses alert, but only occasionally did he detect anyone.
Awfully quiet down here.
It won't last, Mara said. This is a service supply area, and most of the people who'd normally be working here are a level up helping unload the shuttles. But we need to get into some uniforms or flight suits or something before we go much farther.
Luke thought back to the first time he'd tried masquerading as an Imperial.
Okay, but let's try to avoid stormtrooper armor, he said. Those helmets are hard to see through.
I didn't think Jedi needed to use their eyes,
Mara countered sourly.
Watch it! Here we are. That's a section of crew quarters over there.
Luke had already sensed the sudden jump in population level.
I don't think we can sneak through that many people, he warned.
I wasn't planning to.
Mara pointed to another corridor leading off to their right.
There should be a group of TIE pilot ready rooms down that way. Let's see if we can find an empty one that has a couple of spare flight suits lying around.
But if the Empire was lax enough to leave its service supply areas unguarded, it wasn't so careless with its pilot ready rooms. There were six of them grouped around the turbolift cluster at the end of the corridor, and from the sounds of conversation faintly audible through the doors, it was clear that all six were occupied by at least two people.
What now?
Luke whispered to Mara.
What do you think?
She retorted, dropping her blaster back in its holster and flexing her fingers.
Just tell me which room has the fewest people in it, and then get out of the way. I'll do the rest. Wait a minute,
Luke said, thinking hard. He didn't want to kill the men behind those doors in cold blood, but neither did he want to put himself into the dangerous situation he'd faced during the Imperial raid on Lando's Niklon mining operation a few months earlier. There he'd successfully used the Force to confuse the attacking TIE fighters, but at the cost of skating perilously close to the edge of the dark side. It wasn't an experience he wanted to repeat. But if he could just gently touch the Imperial's minds, instead of grabbing and twisting them...
"We'll try this one,"
he told Mara, nodding to a room in which he could sense only three men.
"But we're not going to charge in fighting. I think I can suppress their curiosity enough for me to walk in, take the flight suits, and leave."
"What if you can't?"
Mara demanded.
"We'll have lost whatever surprise we would have had."
"It'll work," Luke assured her. "Get ready."
"Skywalker."
"Besides which, I doubt that even with surprise you can take out all three without any noise," he added. "Can you?"
She glared laser bolts, but gestured him to the door. Setting his mind firmly in line with the Force, he moved toward it. The heavy metal panel slid open at his approach, and he stepped in. There were indeed three men lounging around the monitor table in the center of the room. Two in the Imperial brown of ordinary crewers, the other in the black uniform and flaring helmet of a fleet trooper. All three looked up as the door opened, and Luke caught their idle interest in the newcomer. Reaching out through the Force, he gently touched their minds, shunting the curiosity away. The two crewers seemed to size him up, and then ignore him. The trooper continued to watch, but only as a change from watching his companions. Trying to look as casual and unconcerned as he could, Luke went over to the rack of flight suits against the wall and selected three of them. The conversation around the monitor table continued as he draped them over his arm and walked back out of the room. The door slid shut behind him.
"Well?"
Mara hissed. Luke nodded, exhaling quietly.
"Go ahead and get into it," he told her. "I want to try and hold off their curiosity for another couple of minutes, until they've forgotten I was ever in there."
Mara nodded and started pulling the flight suit on over her jumpsuit.
"Handy trick, I must say."
"It worked this time, anyway," Luke agreed. Carefully, he eased back his touch on the Imperial's minds, waiting tensely for the surge of emotion that would show the whole scheme was unraveling. But there was nothing, except the lazy flow of idle conversation. The trick had worked. This time, anyway.
Mara had a turbo lift car standing by as he turned away from the ready room.
"Come on, come on!"
she beckoned impatiently. She was already in her flight suit, with the other two slung over her shoulder.
"You can change on the way."
"I hope no one comes aboard while I'm doing it," he muttered as he slipped into the car. "Be a little hard to explain."
"No one's coming aboard,"
she said as the turbolift door closed behind him and the car started to move.
"I've keyed it for non-stop."
She eyed him.
"You still want to do it this way?"
"I don't think we've got any real choice,"
he said, getting into the flight suit. It felt uncomfortably tight over his regular outfit. "Han and I tried the frontal approach once on the Death Star. It wasn't exactly an unqualified success."
"Yes, but you didn't have access to the main computer then,"
Mara pointed out.
"If I can fiddle the records and transfer orders, we ought to be able to get him out before anyone realizes they've been had."
"But you'd still be leaving witnesses behind who knew he'd left," Luke reminded her.
"If any of them decided to check on the order verbally, the whole thing would fall apart right there. And I don't think that suppression trick I used in the ready room will work on detention center guards. They're bound to be too alert."
"All right,"
Mara said, turning back to the turbolift control board.
"It doesn't sound like much fun to me, but if that's what you want, I'm game."
The detention center was in the far aft section of the ship, a few decks beneath the command and systems control sections, and directly above engineering and the huge sublight drive thrust nozzles. The turbolift car shifted direction several times along the way, alternating between horizontal and vertical movement. It seemed to Luke to be altogether too complicated a route, and he found himself wondering even now if Mara might be pulling some kind of double-cross. But her sense didn't indicate any such treachery, and it occurred to him that she might have deliberately tangled their path to put the Chimera's internal security systems off the scent. At last the car came to a halt, and the door slid open. They stepped out into a long corridor in which a handful of crewers in maintenance coveralls could be seen going about their business.
Your access door's that way,
Mara murmured, nodding down the corridor.
I'll give you 3 minutes to get set.
Luke nodded and set off, striving to look like he belonged there. His footsteps echoed on the metal deck, bringing back memories of the near-disastrous visit to the first Death Star. But he'd been a wide-eyed kid then, dazzled by visions of glory and heroism, and too naive to understand the deadly dangers that went with such things. Now he was older and more seasoned, and knew exactly what it was he was walking into. And yet was walking into it anyway. Dimly, he wondered if that made him less reckless than he'd been the last time, or more so. He reached the door and paused beside it, pretending to study a data pad that had been in one of the flight suit's pockets until the corridor was deserted. Then, taking one last deep breath of clear air, he opened the door and stepped inside. Even holding his breath, the stench hit him like a slap in the face. Whatever advancements the Empire might have made in the past few years, their shipboard garbage pits still smelled as bad as ever. He let the door slide shut behind him, and as it did so, he heard the faint sound of an internal relay closing. He'd cut things a little too close. Mara must already have activated the compression cycle. Breathing through his mouth, he waited, and a moment later, with a muffled clang of heavy hydraulics, the walls began moving slowly toward each other. Luke swallowed, gripping his lightsaber tightly as he tried to keep on top of the tangle of garbage and discarded equipment that was now starting to buck and twist around his feet. Getting into the detention level this way had been his idea, and he'd had to talk long and hard before Mara had been convinced. But now that he was actually here, and the walls were closing in on him, it suddenly didn't seem like nearly such a good idea anymore. If Mara couldn't adequately control the wall's movement, or if she was interrupted at her task, or if she gave in for just a few seconds to her hatred for him. The walls came ever closer, grinding together everything in their path. Luke struggled to keep his footing, all too aware that if Mara was planning a betrayal, he wouldn't know it until it was too late to save himself. The compressor walls were too thick for him to cut a gap with his lightsaber, and already the shifting mass beneath his feet had taken him too far away from the door to escape that way. Listening to the creak of tortured metal and plastic, Luke watched as the gap between the walls closed to 2 meters, then 1.5, then 1, and came to a shuddering halt, just under a meter apart. Luke took a deep breath, almost not noticing the rancid smell. Mara hadn't betrayed him, and she'd handled her end of the scheme perfectly. Now it was his turn. Moving to the back end of the chamber, he gathered his feet beneath him and jumped. The footing was unstable, and the garbage compactor walls impressively tall, and even with Jedi enhancement behind the jump, he made it only about halfway to the top. But even as he reached the top of his arc, he drew his knees up and swung his feet out, and with a wrenching jolt to his legs and lower back, he wedged himself solidly between the walls. Taking a moment to catch his breath and get his bearings, he started up. It wasn't as bad as he'd feared it would be. He'd done a fair amount of climbing as a boy on Tatooine, and had tackled rock chimneys at least half a dozen times, though never with any real enthusiasm. The smooth walls here in the compactor offered less traction than stone would have, but the evenness of spacing and the absence of sharp rocks to dig into his back more than made up for it. Within a couple of minutes, he had reached the top of the compactor's walls and the maintenance chute that would lead, he hoped, to the detention level. If Mara's reading of the schedule had been right, he had about 5 minutes before the guard shift changed up there. Setting his teeth together, he forced his way through the magnetic screen at the bottom of the chute and in clean air again, started up. He made it in just over 5 minutes to discover that Mara's reading had indeed been right. Through the grating that covered the chute opening, he could hear the sounds of conversation and movement coming from the direction of the control room, punctuated by the regular hiss of opening turbolift doors. The guard was changing, and for the next couple of minutes, both shifts would be in the control room. An ideal time, if he was quick, to slip a prisoner out from under their noses. Hanging on to the grating by one hand, he got his lightsaber free and ignited it. Making sure not to let the tip of the blade show through into the corridor beyond, he sliced off a section of the grating and eased it into the shaft with him. He used a hook from his flight suit to hang the section to what was left of the grating and climbed through the opening. The corridor was deserted. Luke glanced at the nearest cell number to orient himself and set off